Page 554, we are in the middle of Rashi. We've gone through, I think, four psukim. We've gone through Pasuk Dalet, Hey. There's two psukim, Dalet and Hey, two psukim. And we still did not get to the Rashis. Okay, we discussed at great length the many ideas. Let's see Pasuk Hey. We're up to Pasuk Hey of Yisholulu. What does it mean, Yisholulu? It says in Pasuk Hey, the Chutzais in the streets, Yisholulu, the army of Sanherib. Well, that was the question. Who are we discussing? According to Rashi, Rashi Lishitase, we are describing Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is coming to destroy, to obliterate the nation of Ashur, and his army is Yisholulu, Rashi, Yinhagu Atzman Bishigoin. They're behaving in a strange way. Okay, Yishta, if you want to know what this means, just watch the politicians today. You'll know what this means. Yish Dak Shun, Yish Tak Shikun. What does that mean? So we learned until now, according to the Mitzugas, it means to make noise. And he translates, Kol Nikush Ziyo Nehoin Mishdima. The sound of the banging of their of their weapons is heard. Their weapons, the same exact thing as the Mitzvah Stavid, is Targum, he took from the Mitzvah Stavid, from the Targum. The sound of the enemy banging their weapons with the Svahu Lashon, Vihe Shiku, Hayikavim. We had this before, that the Yikavim, when you pour water into the wine press, the Yaakov is the wine press. When the water, the Yakev, so it makes noise. The flowing of the liquid makes noise.
A roar
of a sound. Yeah. Remember, we had this whole discussion. We're not going to talk about it now, but we once discussed at great length that every liquid that is poured makes a different sound. What is the loudest liquid? The loudest of all the liquids? Water. Kol Hashem al Hamayim. The sound of the Niagara Falls. You need ear protection. It's so loud. The sound of water. Which liquid makes the least sound?
Oil.
Exactly. Shemen Zayis. Olive oil. Olive oil makes the least sound, and that's why we talk about Shemen Zayis Mechaverecha. Bar Yochai Moshachta Ashrecha. Shemen sasoin mecha veirecha. Why do we discuss the nakan guru now? Why is Rashbi, do we refer to him shemen sasoin, oil of enjoyment, more so mecha veirecha, more so than your friends? Because the whole essence of Rashbi was he was silenced. He was silenced. He was locked away in a cave for 13 years. No one knew what happened to him. He was Rashbi and his son. And what did he do during that time? In that time, he learned Torah. And when he came out of the cave, so he had a conversation with, I forgot who it was, Pinchas, I don't remember who it was. He said, before you went into the cave, if you asked a question, I don't remember the Gemara, he developed in his learning of Torah in the cave for 13 years beyond belief. And Chazal always say that a chorosh ve'hamasker, this simply means the craftsman. Right. And the gatekeepers were exiled 11 years before the Golus, the Churban of Yerushalayim by Nebuchadnezzar, together with the king, Yehoyachin. Yehoyachin was exiled 11 years early with the Chorosh and the Masker. The Pshutai Shal Mikra, who is the Chorosh and the Masker? The Pasuk tells us it was about 10,000 people, 11,000 people who were exiled. And who were they? They were the craftsmen. People who were skilled workers. And these people were a threat to the Nebuchadnezzar. They were the brains. They knew how to make weapons. They knew technology, and if he would leave these people in Yerushalayim, these people would be a threat to Nebuchadnezzar. So he took them away, he exiled them. Who did he leave over? The simple people who don't know the difference between A and B. They're not a threat. The Chorosh, what?
It doesn't necessarily mean they could make. weapons, but it means they're productive.
Productive. People who are craftsmen, people who are crafts have skills. Hamasker, it's not so clear what that means, the gatekeepers, it would seem to mean the military leadership of the Jewish people, they were exiled.
Well, that's not how it
starts. Okay, that's the Pshuto Shel Mikra. The Pshuto Shel Mikra, okay, the people that were exiled, 11, it's very important to learn the Pshat. First, before you learn, the Jewish is so popular, most people don't even know the Pshat. Okay, the Pshat is who did Nebuchadnezzar exile? The Chorosh, the craftsmen, the Hamasker, the people that locked the doors. And that means people that had skills, were all the scientists. The scientists, all the college-educated people, and the military. He disassembled the military, the generals, the colonels, the leaders, they were all shipped out because they were a threat to Nebuchadnezzar. That's the Pshat. Chazal.
Nobody else
had weapons. Yonah's son, that was it. Everyone would be a threat. Everyone else would be a threat.
Anybody else didn't have
weapons. Anyway.
Why not?
Because the Plishtim didn't let them. They ruled the country.
The Plishtim ruled the country. They were afraid that they would be a threat. Interesting. Same idea. Okay, that's the Pshat. What's the Drush? What's the popular Drush? Achosh Ramaska means the Talmidei Chachamim. And why they call the Chorosh Hamasker? Because Chorosh is a Cheresh, a deaf mute. That's what we need for this Chazal here, and that is that when they would open their mouths and say a drasha, people's jaws would drop. And they had nothing to say. The words were so brilliant, and their arguments, their reasoning was so clear, no one can respond, no one can give a rebuttal.
They had the last word.
Exactly. Like today when they have the State of Union Address, so it's followed by a rebuttal. Right? It's followed by a rebuttal because whatever the president says, I'll say just the opposite, the other side. So in those days, when the Talmud Chacham would say, there was no rebuttal, there's nothing to say. We can't argue with what you've said. You've said words that are MS, therefore they're a cheresh. Chorosh v'hamasker, chorosh miloshen cheresh, a deaf mute. A cheresh is two things. You can't hear, but also in this context, you can't speak. There's nothing they can possibly say. Masker, the Talmidei Chachamim, they had the final word. They had the closing arguments. Their word was the last word because no one had anything to read to respond. So according to this interpretation, Yochin, who did he view to be the real threat? The Pshat is the people that had the skilled laborers, people, the scientists, the professors, and the military. But the Drash is who did he view to be a threat to Klal Yisrael? The Talmidei Chachamim. Because the Talmidei Chachamim indeed are the Nitzchis of Klal Yisrael, and he exiled them 11 years in advance. What do we need a Chazal for? Here, because here it says the Targum's translation translation is of Yish Dak Shikun Kol Nikush Zoyehon Mishtama Kevum Loshon Beheshiku Hayakovim Kimasha Kevim Loshon Hashmo Askol. Sound, it makes a lot of noise. How do we get into Cheresh? I forgot how we got into Cheresh. We'll come back in a moment, but in this interpretation. Okay, but whatever it means over here, the enemy Nebuchadnezzar is approaching. Yisholulu harechev. They're acting in a way that's shigoin. Shigoin loshnova, like chaos. Okay, they made themselves the shigoin. Okay, it cannot mean pride. Shigoin means aleph. What? Crookedness, craziness. They
madness.
Conduct themselves madness. Okay, madness. Good translation. And yishtak shekun. They made a lot of noise with their weapons. Okay, next yiroitzeitzu. They ran about yiroau es hashoimim. They would break. The word yirea roa means to crush. It means to break. Yiro'au es hashoimim, they would crush them. The people that would listen to them would be crushed. Kibirokim halalu hatardim es habriyos, like lightning hatardim, which confuse and shake up. it shakes up, because when you see bolts of lightning, you get scared. Chazal say, well, the thunder. Thunder is the re'aim, and barak is lightning. But when a person sees lightning, I guess, which is accompanied by thunder, Chazal said the only reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created thunder and lightning is to straighten out the akmimus halev, to straighten out the crookedness of the heart. Person is complacent, he thinks he's invincible, and Hashem sends to this world thunder and lightning, and a person gets scared, it affects him. And he recognizes that he's not so invincible in this world. There's an authority, there's a power that's greater. So that's the example of here, Nebuchadnezzar, they came forward, they look like kilapitim, like torches, kibarakim yiraitseitsu, and with barakim, with lightning yiraitseitsu, he's learning over here, Russian yiro'alu, they crushed the people, they broke them, they broke their spirit. Not like the Mitzvot David, who translated the word yiraitseitsu means the Russian v'rotz. V'rotz kitzvi, run like a deer swiftly. So you have a difference of opinion as to the word yiraitseitsu. Does it mean to run, or does it mean to shatter?
Right.
To shatter a person's spirit. Because that concludes Rash. Let's look at the Radak. Radak going back to Pasuk Dalet.
Look at this Malachi 10. It makes more sense that the yiraitseitsu run. To back and forth.
To run, right. So then you would have to say, right, then you would have to say the word yiraitseitsu. Yiraitseitsu is all back on kibarakim, according to the Rashi. Rashi, is the word yiraitseitsu going back on the entire expression, or is the word yiraitseitsu going back on the word kibarakim? If you want means to run, then you would assume the word yiraitseitsu is going back on the entire expression. Is that by when you mare hen, when I would look at them, they would be running. They would be running kilapidim, like torches, and kibarakim, and like bolts of lightning. But if you learn like the parish of the Mitzvot David, like Rashi, yiraitseitsu means to shatter.
Right.
So then not necessarily does the word yiraitseitsu go back on the word marehen. Marehen kilapidim, they look like bright torches. Kibarakim, just like a barak, a bolt of lightning. A bolt of lightning shatters a person's spirit, it terrifies a person. When you see lightning in front of you, so too the people will shatter. Yeah.
Well, you can go either way with this. I just wanted to mention. It says, by Yisrotzitzu Havonim Bekir Ba.
Oh, excellent.
And there, what does Rashi say? He says, because one wanted to run out to the Beis HaMedrash, one wanted to run out to the Avodah Zorah, so they take it from Yisrotzitzu to run.
Rutz Kitzvi. Excellent. But maybe you can say a drush, not pshat, a drush is by Yisrotzitzu Havonim Bekir Ba. They shattered her spirit. Batelech lidvarish Hashem. What is going on? She's lomazel nechi. How could it possibly be? So maybe you have a whole new insight now. By Yisroititzu, Rivka was shattered. Her spirit was, she was looking forward to having Mitzvah. She was nakara. She was mispalo. And finally, wow, after all this, finally I'm zoicha to be pregnant. She conceived. And then the strangest things happen. You pass the place of Avodah Zarah. Baby wants to go to Avodah Zarah, and then you go to Beis HaKnesses, it also wants to go there. That's even worse. If a child only wants to go to a Beis Avodah Zarah in one respect, that's better than a child wanting to go to both. Because at least you know with what you're dealing with. A child wants to go to a Beis Avodah Zarah, but he doesn't want to go to the Beis HaKnesses, so you can sit him down and explain to him, you have to know what you're a little bit confused. But a child that wants to go to both a Beis Avodah Zarah and a Beis HaKnesses, Beis Medrash, that in one respect can be even worse. Speak to a psychologist, it can be even worse. There's no hope for such a person. So therefore, by Yisroititzu HaBanim, the Banim shattered, they together, what they were doing, what was taking place inside of a room, shattered her. If that's correctly correct, you have to really wiggle around the grammar of this expression. And that's why the pasuk goes on to say, it fits pretty good. Does anyone say that? I don't know. You have to look at the Rishonim and see if someone says such a pshat. But here we have Rashi and the Mitzvot clearly disagreeing. Is the word Yisroitzu means to run, or does it mean to shatter? Yeah.
But clearly, the Rashi quotes the Medrash. That's clearly what the Medrash is strictly.
Over here, it means to shatter. In this pasuk here. And Rashi and Chumash says there it means Vayisroitzitzu means to run. Rots, yeah.
Isn't there also a pshat that after Esav was born, he and she was unable to have more children, he...
He ruled her rechem. He destroyed her...
That he shattered her on the inside, physically.
That was late. But this took place when she was still pregnant. That was later. When she gave birth, he brought about damage. But right now, she was pregnant. She did not give birth. And at this moment in time, there were strange things that were taking place. And she had a tsar hiroyon, too much pain. There was too much pain going on inside of her. She was shattered. Lama zeh, what do I need this for? Vateilich lidroish es Hashem. Okay, let's see over here. Next words of the Radak. The Radak in Pasik Dalid begins on page, back on page 553 in the Radak. Mogain Giboy Rehu, the shield of his mighty men. Omar Al-Chel Nebuchadnezzar. So right away we have to appreciate that the Radak is learning the Shitasa like Rashi. The subject of this Pasik is Nebuchadnezzar, not like the Mitzudais, who learns that the subject is Ashur. Who are we describing here? Are we describing the kingdom of Ashur as they attack and inflict harm upon Klal Yisrael in the lifetime of Nahum? Or are we describing a nation that will come forward in the future, a prophecy of what will happen in the future when Nebuchadnezzar will come to destroy the nation of Ashur in punishment to what Ashur has done to Klal Yisrael? So according to the Radak, we're describing the future. Nebuchadnezzar coming to attack the nation of Ashur. Mogin Giborehu, the shield of his mighty men. Omer Al-Chel Nebuchadnezzar, Haboim Al-Ninveh. Giborehu, that's a very unusual word. Kimo Giboroth, his mighty men. Giborov, that is more something we relate to, that form of the word. This is a more sophisticated grammatical form of the word. Giborehu, his mighty men. Next, Me'odom Omar Ze Lishtei Sibois. The word Me'odom means red. What does red have to do with a shield? Two reasons. V'chemelanshe chayil misuloim. The soldiers look like worms, which mean red. Red, toilah shani. The dye that we extract from this creature produces a red color. Shepirushoi levushim begodim tzivuim b'tolashani. They were dressed in clothing that was dyed with the dye of a tolashani. This week's parasha. Ha'achas ligdulasam v'rev kevaydam. One is because that was the style. Okay, that was the fashion statement of the day. A soldier wears red clothing. V'achas lefishut seva mafhik umiyorei b'nei adam. He's saying a fascinating insight that you have to study. Studies historically, that's true, is psychological warfare. That the color of your clothing, in color of your uniform, is part of the battle. Intimidates.
I guess the Brits thought that too.
Was that what they were thinking by having these lavish costumes? I don't know. We have to study history. Maybe it's true. But the Radak says that he's saying he's learned Shan the Pasik. The reason why they had red shields, and they had clothing that was dyed red.
The Revolutionary War,
the red coat. So the question is, so what were they thinking? I don't know what they were thinking, but according to the Radak is saying that the shield, he makes no mention of blood. Rashi and the Mitzudas agree that the reason why the shields are red, they're dripping with blood in battle. And as we discussed this, that a shield is not just a defensive measure. A shield is used in battle as an offensive measure. They were extremely heavy, and they would bang them. And just banging a shield into your victim, into your enemy, would cause their bodies to be pulverized and blood would gush forth. And the shields were dripping with blood. Both Rashi and the Mitzvah David seem to understand that when it is done by the shield, that's what it means. That's not what the Radak says. The Radak says they painted the shields red. Why? Because psychological warfare. When your enemy sees these bright red shields coming against you, they run. They run for their lives.
You know what the name Rothschild means?
No.
Red shield.
Wow. Rothschild. Child is a shield. Rothschild is a shield?
The house. The house had a shield. Right. They identified houses by pictures of
the house signs.
And the house sign was a red shield.
Right.
A shield. Child is a shield. And Roth is red.
Well, it's not child.
The right.
Shield.
Right.
Shield.
Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right. You spell it. There's an S in there.
Right shield.
That's a German
Roth shield. Fascinating. Wow, okay. Now I know. I know the whole Rothschild family. I know many of them over here in Flatbush. There's a whole collection of them.
Now we have to figure out how to
I actually sat next. I sat next to my davening. He says, I sit at the table right in front of him. And Rosh Chodesh was there the last 2 days. I see, not. He, I don't think he's, I think, you know, he's married to her, from that family. Next. Okay. Fascinating. Fascinating. Okay. Then so this is so two things. Kvoidam, it's an honorable thing, and also in time of Chazal, in time of Tcheles today, we no longer know absolutely what is Tcheles. Where to go? Why did Tcheles disappear? So one of the reasons why Tcheles disappeared was because it was illegal for a Jew to have Tcheles, not just because Tcheles, because of Shmat, but because only nobility was allowed to wear this color. This is an historical fact.
Purple,
have to,
purple is a fine.
Well, that's purple. But even blue. But even the blue, I don't know the details, but there was a period of time in Klal Yisrael where it's illegal. Tcheles, this color, this dye, the dye of Tcheles is miyuchad for kings, for the government. The Romans, I don't know if it was the Romans, it was the Persians, I'm not sure exactly what Tekufa. But that contributed. That is contributed to the fact that we lost the Mesorah, the absolute Mesorah of Tcheles, because.
See it in the Megillah also.
Chor Karpas was Tcheles. So it's always been like that. So the question is, just because it's a royal garment, very nice. You could have it. Just don't show it. Don't wear a whole garment. Beget talis shekula Tcheles. Just don't go display. You want to wear it. Maybe it sits. What's so terribly weird is just don't wear a garment. Only a king is allowed to wear tcheles. If you walk in the street and there's tcheles on your garment, or then they'll arrest you. You're masquerading as a noble, and you're a nobody. You're not a noble. So I don't know. There probably were times when it wasn't illegal to have it. A Jew wants to have it and wear tzitzis, a little string, fine, good for you. But there were times when. But with times where you're not even allowed to possess it. Possessing it meant you're looking for trouble. You're looking over here, who knows, you're going to masquerade as being a noble. You'll walk into a, you'll pretend that you have authority. And because you were not allowed to have it, it got very hard to find. And slowly, little by little, we forgot exactly what is the authentic Tcheles. So a lot of the things that we don't do today, I mean, there's an element of not being able to do mitzvahs because of shmad. The goyim do not want us to be religious. They feel that our religion is a threat to their life. And then there are times where it has nothing to do with religion. It's just a conflict to their interests. Prohibition. We have a mitzvah, daf yomi, koi shel bracha. Every time you bench, you have to bench al koi shel yayin. Yeah, my wedding, and by a bris milah, a pidyon haben, and every brichas hamazon. Now, if there's a law in the land of prohibition, you're not allowed to have alcohol, it's a big problem. Now, you'll say, yeah, for religious reasons, they make an exception. Yeah, you got to go get a permit, you have to prove it's for religion, and you have to do this, you got to do that. It just makes it very difficult. Even though, yeah, you can get a license, you can go through all the steps. Now, when the government, I don't know all the details, but when the government had a law that you're not allowed to own wine, alcohol, because it's a drug, they would probably never fathom the day when marijuana would become legal. But when they issued a ban, you're not allowed to have wine. Was it for the persecution? That the United States of America doesn't want Jews to engage in religion? It's freedom of religion. It wasn't their kavan. It's a conspiracy theory to say the whole law of prohibition. No one says that, but I'm saying you'll always find it. But so then let's say we had difficulty. You'll tell me as a consequence, and it's true, there are different halachas, there are different in Jewish history, there are different things that maybe have been affected by those years of prohibition. Where it trickles down today that we're not so nizar in Yayin, because since there was a period of time when it was illegal and to get the license was not so simple, and people didn't want to go through the effort, and they were lenient, they've developed leniency in certain areas of halacha that trickle down today. Now, did the Goyim have Kavana? They wanted to persecute the Jews, and they don't want us to practice our religion? No such thing. No such thing. There's a freedom of religion in this country. It's just a practical matter. They did not allow this, and we have this problem. So when it talks over here about red, it talks over here that this idea that they wore the Anshei Chayil Misulaim, we have to appreciate is that this color, red, was a sign of nobility. It's very likely that it was illegal for an average person to get dressed up in a garment using this dye. And it's exactly this, exactly what the Medrash says. It is for this reason that Hashem wants us to wear tcheles. There are many, many reasons why we wear tcheles, why we have a mitzvah to wear tcheles on our garments. Tzitzis tcheles. So one reason is Yam tcheles doimel yam, and Yam doimel rekia, and rekia is doimel kisya kovit. So by looking at the tcheles, we're going to come to Yirah Shamayim. It's a psychological technique in order to inspire us to come to fear Hashem. That's one pshat. But another pshat given in the Medrash is Hashem wants to remind us that Kol b'nei Yisrael b'nei melachim ninu. Every single Jew is a noble. Every single Jew is a prince. Klal Yisrael is atem tihin yuli mamleches koyhanim. And therefore, being that it was a given in ancient times, tcheles is the color, is the dye of nobility. No one would dare wear tcheles unless they were a part of the government. Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, not by me, by my nation, every single Jew should have on his garment a strand of tcheles to remind you, you are kings, you are choshev, you're dignified people, you're not like everyone else. You're elevated people. You're a nation of kings. And you get a little taste of that here because of the various cults. The Mishkan, the whole Mishkan was Argamon, Tola Hashani, Techeles. What's that about? What's that? Why is the Mishkan so colorful? Why these colors? Because these are the colors of nobility, the colors of Malchus. In the time when the Torah was given, the time when the Mishkan was built in all the nations of the world, you don't dare play around with these colors, with these dyes. These are the dyes of nobility. That's right, the Mishkan and the Kohanim who do avoid in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, and the Urios that cover the Mishkan. It's a place of the ultimate nobility. Okay, let's go further. The Radak, Be'esh Peladois HaRechev, HaRechev HuKilu HaLich Be'esh Peladois. The chariot, it's as if the chariot is going Be'esh Peladois. What does that mean? Ki Galgali HaRechev Hem Barzel. The wheels are iron. Okay, not rubber. Isn't that amazing? Today, tanks, what are tanks made out of? Steel. Okay, the treads of the tanks today are made from steel, which is a new and improved version of iron. Okay, but so that nothing has changed, at least in that respect. Uvin merut sasama, when the treads rub against the earth, baderachim alecho avonim, on the stones, what happens? Yotze esh mitocha mikrecha merutza. Sparks come out. The yidnesh arechav hu be'esh peladois. It looks like the chariots are running through fire. It's exactly what the mitzudois David said. U peladois hu kmo hafuch. The word peladois, you have to take the two letters, the pei and the lamid, and it's lapid. The real word is lapid, a torch, a spark, and we're going to change the words kmo lapide esh, period. B'yom achino, b'yom shiachin nevuchanetzar es hachayil lavo el ninve kein tiye techunasoi, so will be techunasoi, his nature. Okay, techuna means, this is what's going to, it's going to be his essence, his nature. This is what's going to take place on the day when he prepares to go and destroy Ashur. He will set up his chariots with iron wheels. They will make sparks. And the soldiers will paint their shields red and will put on red garments to engage in psychological warfare. V'habe roshim har alu. What does this mean? Yesh the farshim? Yeah?
Tchunaso means his preparation.
Tchunaso, that's hachana. Yeah. The word tchunaso normally means your nature.
Yeah, but...
Kein tiyeh tchunaso. Right, so he's struggling. Everyone is struggling.
He's getting ready.
The day he's getting ready. This is what you do. This is what he does. This is what he knows how to do. He knows, like so everyone has to do what they know how to do. Like I know
I have a routine for what they do. And
what they do best. Like I know there was a certain family, so Rahman al-Islam was a very big tzar. And in this family, there are all different types of people. There are people that are very big Talmidei Chachamim. And there are people that are very big. There's one particular person, a very, very big Baal Avodah. He knows how to daven. He really, really, the real deal. The real deal, he knows how to daven. You watch him daven, and he has this, he has a nature to go to Kvarim of different tzaddikim to daven. He really knows how to cry and daven. Very, very powerful person. And then there are people in the family that are phenomenally rich. But that's what they're not Talmidei Chachamim, they're not daveners. But they're very rich, like really, really big. And Rahman al-Itzlan, there was a big tzar. Okay, this goes back 2 years ago. So the Talmidei Chachamim, they wanted a schus. The person died. He died very, very young. He died not very quickly, a very short illness. But that kufa, the Talmidei Chachamim, the family, they totally immersed themselves in learning. They're going to learn L'zuchus D'Refuah Shleima. And the person that was the big Baal Tzfila, he literally took a tour of the world. He went to Poland, and he went to Eretz Yisrael. They went over here in America to all the biggest schools, to daven. And the other fellow, who's phenomenally wealthy, but not much of anything else, he gave an astronomical amount of money for tzedakah. The zuchus for refuah shleim, like totally out, an incredible amount of money to tzedakah. Fortunately, the person died. But I, as an observer, who partially related to this family through marriage, one of my relatives, observed, like everyone does what they know how to do. The one who knows how to daven, davens. The one who knows how to learn, they sit and they learn, they become bigger masmidim, and they learn makabel to learn more lezuchus refuah shleima. And the other guy who doesn't know how to learn, it's not his thing. Okay, he doesn't have patience. This guy, he talked to me, he can't hold, he can't have a conversation with him. He can't look at you more than literally 10 seconds. Even that's all love. That's the way, that's how he is. He has no zitzflesh. Davening, he doesn't really have patience to daven, you know? His davening is like my davening, in and out. But he has a lot of money. Boy, I can't figure out, and for the life of me, how he was able to all this success. This is good at. He does, everyone does what they know how to do. He gave money to tzedakah. This one davens. This one learns. So each one does. That's what it means in my vocabulary. Tichunasai, their nature. You know what you know how to do. This is what I do in my life. This is what Hashem gave me. Hashem gave me this nature to be involved in these things. And now there's a problem. I'll contribute to the cause what I know how to do best. So Nebuchadnezzar, this is what he knows how to do. Nebuchadnezzar, when he wants to do something, what does he do? I know how to dress up my people in red costumes and give them red shields and go have, get my tanks put on the tread, polish the tread with iron tread and on my chariots, and we're going to go very, very quick and make a lot of sparks. This is what I know how to do. Nebuchadnezzar is not a Talmud Chacham. He's not a Yerush Shemayim. He's not a this, he's not a that. He's a warrior. He's a warrior.
Which makes him a
Talmud Chacham.
That makes him smart.
If you're rich, it makes you smart, a Talmud Chacham. Not a warrior. You got to
work.
Hakesef Yanes Hakol. Hakesef Yanes Hakol. What?
He buys the warrior.
I don't think so.
Okay, this
someone
is...
Neighbors could say that's pshat.
Someone at that level of
teshuva, either one of those is Mavir and Esrog.
Teshuva, Usfilu, Tzedaka, right?
You do what you, you know...
What you know how to do.
Options.
Everyone can only do what they know how to do.
You mentioned Rothschild before. I just heard this morning that Rabbi Goldberg told the story. And I don't know which Rothschild passed away, left the tzavah, he should be buried in socks. Was the whole tumult? They go to the whole story?
And he said, no, you're not allowed to.
No socks. A month, they wouldn't bury his socks. A month later, they opened up the next letter. They left for a month later after he died.
Just like I can't take socks.
You can't take anything with you.
It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. Beautiful Musahaski. The story is, he left over two letters. And he said, read this letter when I die, and read the second letter a month later, something along those lines. So when he died, the letter says, I want to be buried in socks. So they went to the Rav. And the Rav says, nothing doing. I don't care. The halacha is there. Tachrichin. There are eight garments. Tachrichin is like a kohen gadol. A person is buried like a kohen gadol. A kohen gadol wears eight garments. Parashas tetzaveh, shmoneh begadim. There are eight tachrichin. There are eight garments that a mace is buried, is dressed in, like the kohen gadol. So the Rav says, nothing doing. The halacha is the halacha. No socks here. I'm sorry. I don't care who he is. I don't care. Rothschild. No socks. Okay, they buried him. Then came a month later. They opened up the second letter. He gave instructions. And the second letter says, you see, they didn't bury me in socks. Because the rabbi said, you're not allowed to be buried in socks. So this should be a Musa Haskel to all of you people. If I can't take with me into the next world, into my grave, I can't take socks. Allah has kama v'kama, you can't take one red cent with you into the grave, into the next world.
The story is said about Reichman.
Reichman.
I heard it. Rothschild.
All right, it's all the same.
Who's Lord Richard?
So it's all the same. Okay? And then there's another story about Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein in Russia, there was a miser, a very, very wicked man in Russia that caused the Jewish community enormous, enormous harm. And then he got sick and he was about to die, and he gave a tzava to the people, I want to be buried head down. Instead of face up, face down. Bury me on my stomach. So he died, and they came to Rav Moshe, this is tzava, Rav Moshe has nothing doing, even though he's a Russia Merushan, he caused us a lot of tzar. Listen, he's gone, it's over, get over it. Just do what the halacha says, bury him face up. They buried him face up. This Rasha was such a Rasha, he wanted to do harm to Klal Yisrael after he died. So the same time he gave it tzavah that he should be buried face down, he sent a letter to the government, whoever the czar was, the czar of Russia, Chveis, I don't know, whoever was in charge there, that the Jews are rebelling against you, and I'll show it to you, they're not the real deal. Look, they're gonna bury me face down. Even though the halacha requires Jewish law to be buried face up, because they hate me, I was so bad, they hate me, they're gonna bury me, you're gonna see face down. So the czar, whoever was the authority, sent shluchim, and they dug him up to see if it was true. And it wasn't true. He was buried face up. And Rav Moshe's psak halacha saved the day. It would have been a great tzar. Okay, let's go weiter. Let's go further over here in the Rashi. So Rashi here says, I'm sorry, in the Radak. Okay, now up to the next. We're up to over here, the Beroisim Haralu. The Beroisim, so over here he gives in the parish of Yeshvarshim, Hachaniyos, the spheres. Shehem eats Beroish. Beroish is a certain type of wood. Translation of Chal, what's the translation of Beroish?
Cypress.
Cypress wood. As I know the difference. Okay, Omar. Go on. I once had to buy some wood online not that long ago, and they showed me all the samples of every type of tree, like this little piece of wood. I'm totally lost. What's the difference between this type of wood, that type of wood? I started doing some research. It's a whole world out there of different types of woods. Every what each type of wood is ideal for. What the milus of what are you trying to use the wood for? What do you need it for? Furniture, building. For arts, for a face, it's unbelievable. There's such a big world out there, so much chachma. They would lace the tip of the spear with poisons, exactly what the mitzvah stuff it said. He translates the word charalu ra'al, the kais hatar ela, the toxic cup. Emcholi, it's your term. You coined that term, the toxic cup, and the beroish is, it means cypress wood. Amar kisam avis b'roshim l'chamis maher, quickly. Mi sheyitku ubochem, anyone that has been perforated by the sword, by the spear. Ki oisim kanisam b'roshim v'imchadim, there's a sharp point. B'roshim v'saikim oisim l'guf adam, and they penetrate the body. K'moish omer b'yoyav, Vayikach shleisha shivatim, three rods, vayiskoim belev avshalom. It does not say by avshalom that they poisoned the tip of the spear. It just says that they perforated his heart. Three spears went into his heart. Haralu min tar ela. Tar ela means poison. Shem mefarshim samam ovetz. Vadoni avizal, my father, Adak, often quotes his father. Peresh tar ela ri'ada. New translation. Not like the Mitzudas, not like Rashi, it means re'oda, terror. Terror. Not like we learned ituf. We learned yesterday Rashi, the word har'olu means to be enveloped, a garment. And the word b'roshim, the base, is not part of the shoresh. The shoresh is rosh. L'rosh v'loy lizanav, a head. And it means the generals, the captains, the colonels, the lieutenants were, they had hats, they had big, shmata, shawls, whatever they wore. They wore some type of garment that enveloped them, and the roshim were covered by some type of hat or enclosure, shelter. That's how Rashi learned. Now he's giving us a new interpretation of what Radu here means. Uperish haralu radu tera perish b'roshim sarich ha'ir shal ninve ugudoleha. The leaders of the city and the princes, also like Rashi, ki hagidoylim nimshlu la'arozim. Oh, so he's saying something a little different. Maybe this is what Rashi meant to say. Okay, maybe the word roshim over here means cypress, and cypress is a tree like cedar. Arzei halavonoin, a very tall, mighty tree, and refers to the very tall, mighty soldiers. Nimshul arozim v'liv roishim.
Right.
Yeah. Omar.
In Tanakh, we use two types of trees to refer to
tall, might. Erez and Beroish. And notice the contrast. And with the describing of your Nebuchadnezzar is very, very fascinating. With the describing of your Nebuchadnezzar, okay, so in the Kinois is already 500 years later, and we're describing the Chorim of the Bayis Sheni. And there when we describe the death of the Talmidei Chachamim, they're called the Arzei Halavonoin. And here Nebuchadnezzar's men are being described as Beroshim. So it's interesting that according to this, maybe I made a mistake. I understood yesterday that Berosh, Lashon of Rosh, not necessarily, according to the Radak is saying it means the leaders. It does mean the leaders, but a leader is described as the metaphor of the cypress tree. Yet Talmidei Chacham, we don't find them being described, at least not that I know of, being described as a cypress, we describe them as an Erez. So is there some significance? Is that a mighty leader among the Umayyad Sa'ilam in war is called a Barosh, and a mighty leader in Klali Yisrael is called an Erez.
Yeah, well, but not always. We're getting close to Purim. It's like, Tachas Hana Atzus Ya'ale Barosh.
Ooh, wow, very nice. So Tachas.
Mordechai.
Tachas Hana Atzus. Say that Tachas.
Tachas Hana Atzus, meaning Haman.
And
yeah,
what is
that?
A Barosh is Mordechai. So Mordechai is described as a Barosh. Beautiful. Wow. So you see, even Talmidei Chacham are called Barosh. So maybe it means that maybe you have to readjust during the time of the Bayis Rishon, they were called a Rosh. Mordechai was a Rosh. Barosh. He was from the Barosh. He was the tail end of the Bayis Rishon, the conduit between the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. And the Bayis Sheni, we refer to the leaders as Arozim. Very, very interesting, okay, to explore this idea in more detail, these two types of trees, and how they're used in Chazal to describe leaders, different eras and different types of leaders, a Berosh and an Erez. And maybe that's what Rashi meant. I yesterday wanted to say that the word Beroshim, I wanted to suggest that the Rosh means a head. Roish v'loy lezanav. Not necessarily. You see the way the Radak says the same concept, that the word Berosh means a leader, but he says, no, it means a cypress, Shutakim Hashmai Berosh, but a cypress is a metaphor for a mighty person. A person is a tree. Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. So there are some trees, you know, there are weeds that grow in the trees, and then there are the real deal. There is different types of choshev woods. But here is where he definitely differs than Rashi. Har olu is terror. Lashon re'ada. Where's the dalet in this word? There's no dalet in this word. Somehow he holds that the dalet is not a critical part of the word. We had this yesterday. Mashir yosoin. The leaders of the camp. The camps, meaning the army, Misar Berlin, were decorated or were enveloped bitziv oinin with colored clothing. Any color, okay?
Something I need to do now.
Okay, everything should be good. With bitziv oinin with colored clothing. Okay, so this is the two. All right, so we have so far three interpretations of the word hor alu, poison, or an envelopment, a garment, or ra'al, or as he says over here, means terror. Okay, and I think the hardest word is really the word. He doesn't really bring a source. He does not bring a source. Everyone brought a source. Rashi quoted the pasuk in Yeshaya that the word ra'al relates to a garment, and the Radak here brings a source for the mitzudos. It means tar elah. But this third interpretation to suggest that it means ra'ad, it means terror, we don't have here a source. Okay, pasuk hey. Bachutzois yischadlu harechav, and the streets, the rechav will act in a strange way. Kilo yuchal lotzeis chutz le'ir li'lochem imachayil. They're not going to go out into the street to fight imachayil. Ki rav mehem mehem v'gibor mehem, they're going to be more powerful. Vehem holchem u'toycho ir. Bachutzois like monsters, madness. So he says something very, very important, that the war will come to them. There is significance in the word bachutzois, in the streets. In other words, no one wants to fight a war in their hometown, because in the process, it'll destroy the city. When you go fight a war, you want to fight in the battlefield. Special places designated to fight, or take the war to your enemy. The enemy will come and fight street battle, and in the process destroy the infrastructure of your city is a horror. Look what Germany, the whole Germany was destroyed. The Allies dropped, you know.
Well, they destroyed all the other cities, I mean, went round and round.
Yes and no. Yeah, I mean, yes and no. They were so terrifying. They didn't necessarily need to destroy. They didn't necessarily. I don't go study World War II history again. But I think what the Allies did to Germany was worse. At the end of the day, when the war was over, the amount of money that was needed to rebuild Germany was a lot more than the amount of money that was needed to rebuild the other countries that Germany occupied. Because their terror was just so intense, they didn't have to do anything. Half the time, they just came in, they took over. They didn't have to destroy everything, but in Germany, when the Allies attacked, they dropped. You know, they just bombed them out of their minds. There was nothing left. They destroyed everything. Over here, it says bachutzos. The fighting is going to be in the street. Okay, that's a very important point. Next. And they're going to go about like mishugam harechav rotzalema rochvi harechav in the rehim aparashim the horsemen. Yish dak shekun baruchavos yelcho bebehola. So he baruchavos uir uperush yish dak shekun yaku shayk el shayk belechta bebehola. Noise. It doesn't say necessarily noise, but they're going to bang a thigh against. They're going to bang on their thighs, or they're going to bang one against another. They're going to hit each other as a way of creating commotion. V'yodasam tirgim kol nikush, the banging. The sound of the banging, we did this already twice, ze yo nehoin of their weapons, mishtama, it will be heard, berchoive kirya, in the streets of the city. Okay, marihen kalapitim, sheeshlam boishes, Now here we have a whole new pshat, a whole new interpretation of this word. Until now, we translate the word Mariam Kalapitim as a reference to the enemy. All of the commentators until now learned that this is a description of the appearance of the enemy. Whether the enemy is Sancheirev, attacking Klal Yisrael, or it is Nebuchadnezzar attacking Sancheirev, the enemy looks like a lapid. Kilapidim, and a torch. A lapid is a torch. It looks like a fiery torch. This no one disagrees. The only disagreement was up on the top of the page, Pilados. Okay, but here it says it the correct way, Kilapidim. Here everyone agrees that they look like a lapid. So until now we learned that who is the subject of this expression? It is either Nebuchadnezzar or Sancheirev. Along comes Radak, I disagree. The subject, Mariam Kalapitim, is the victims. The victim. When the victim sees that they're being destroyed, the victim looks like a lapid. Now, what does that mean? Sheyesh lahem boishes. They're put to shame. They realize now their days are numbered. Ki ein ki bokitzam ve'ilam koyach lilochim negraveim. V'yoshuv marei p'neim odoim. And their faces turn red. Kalapidim, like a torch. I guess a torch, fire has many colors. Okay, gas has bluish. We look at the range on your range. What color does gas burn? When you burn gas, blue, a bluish color. When you burn wood, every type of item that's combustible produces a different shade, a different color. So
smoke like blue.
Well, that smoke is different. That smoke is different. There are different colors of smoke as well. There's white smoke, there's black smoke, there's gray smoke. It all depends on what you are burning.
Different lights.
Baruch Me'orei Ha'esh. Yesterday's daf. Me'orei, very good, very good. Yesterday's daf, 2 days ago. Me'orei, fire has many colors. Okay, we know that black really includes all colors. White only is one color. Okay, there are different colors, so it all depends on what item you are using as your fuel to produce fire.
If you bang, black is the absence of color.
What?
Or black is the absence of color.
Black is the combination of all colors.
Really?
Black absorbs all color. Black is all colors.
Black is.
Yeah,
all the way around?
Black.
White is all colors?
Black.
I'm sorry then.
Why do you make any color you want?
Black is absolutely.
Black is no color, white is all colors together?
Yeah.
When you put all the colors together, right. You get white. Okay, absent color is black. I'm sorry. Okay, so every item. So here he's saying that a lapid, we have to understand what it is, an insight into what type of fuel they use in ancient times in a torch. Obviously, the fuel they used in the torch produced a reddish hue. Okay, if you fuel today a torch with gas, it would produce a blue hue. Okay, you have to go look at these videos. You know, they have these flamethrowers. I'm sure you've all seen this on some video. A flamethrower. What color do you see when they have the flamethrowers? Reddish, right? So it must be that when you are, there are different, obviously there are different types of.
It mixes with the air and it changes.
So it all depends. So it depends what kind of fuel you're using.
Blue at the very
right. So it depends. Also, it depends on the heat. What's the temperature? There are many, many factors in the color variables in the color of fire.
Look at the range. It starts out as blue and then turns red as it gets further away from the range.
There are many variables. So here, all we have to learn over here is that, over here he says, Pneim Odoim Kalapidim. And notice red is very prominent in these two psukim. Because we start out, Mogein Gibarehu Me'odom, red shields. Then Anshechal Misuloim, Toila Shani, red garments. And then it says now that a lapid, he's the first one to reveal the secret information, a lapid is red. And it says the top of the pasuk, Be'esh Pilodois. And the Radak brings from his father that what does it mean, Pilodois? It's not Pilodois, it's Pilodois. Lapidois. Lapid, that changes, Hafuch, change the pandalamid, that Be'esh Lapidois. And what is a lapid? Over here, he tells us red. So that's already three reds in the back on the top of the page. So Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar was obsessed with red. That his shields were red, his clothing was red, and they had torches. They made sure they had just the right temperature and just the right fuel that the torch should be red. It's a sign to make sure it looks red. The torch looks red. Red, red, red. And then what happened to the enemy? The enemy turns red. Why does the enemy is so embarrassed when he realizes that his days are numbered, his face turns red. Red, red, red results in red. There's obviously, and now you have a new appreciation of Edom. Edom, the nation of Edom, they're called red. The whole essence of the nation of Edom is a pot of lentils. He sold, Esav sold the firstborn, right, for what?
Go into the
supermarket, Goya, you have all the varieties of the beans. Okay, only one color, one of them is red beans. They have red, you know, every color you can imagine, every type of bean. The red, red, red. So he sold it for Odoim, red.
Many presidents wear red
color. It's color.
So obviously there is something over here about the color red, at least we're uncovering this very powerful idea. The Parah Aduma Tamima. Tahara is perfectly red. On the Mizbeach, there's the Chut HaSikra. There's the red line that separates between the damim, the blood that goes lamala and lamata. Judaism is very colorful. There are a lot of colors in Judaism.
The Kohen Gadol wears only white.
Yeah. The Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur only wears white when he goes to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But when he's not going to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's multicolored. He's wearing techeles, a garment of techeles. The ephod is multicolored. Tolas Shani, techeles. Argamon, purple, that's really, and gold strands. So they have gold, you have red, and you have blue and purple. And there's some white also showing here and there. There's some white, that's already five colors. And the tzitz, the band is blue. The band, and he wore tefillin. Chazal said, what color are the tefillin? Black. And they were tzuas, the halacha l'moshe m'sinai, the Kohen Gadol wore black also. So look at the Kohen Gadol, look at him. He's wearing blue with the ephod, which is purple, red, white, gold, and red, five colors. He's wearing black tefillin. The only question is, what color is his hair? is this hair? He had a haircut every single day. He had hair. I object. I object. He had hair every single day. They had a haircut. The haircut of the Kohen Gadol. Each strand. Was his hair brown? Was it black? Was it white? Was it gray? Did Klal Yisrael give him Agmas Nevesh? He had gray hair. Was he a redhead? David was a redhead, it says. But David's not Malchus. David's not the Kohen Gadol. What color was his hair? So you see that? It's an amazing thing is that the Kohen Gadol was a very colorful person. A very colorful person. There's a lot of, what? And the Urim v'Tumim. The Urim v'Tumim are multicolored. Every stone is a different color. And it's even clear, this crystal. One of the stones is Bedolach. Bedolach is clear. Okay, no color. No color at all. So it's an amazing thing that you have over here. And color is quite, there's a lot of color in Yadus. Just to wear black and white and say about Yeshivachim, they look like penguins, okay? They look like penguins, black and white. It's not true. It's not nice. It's not true. There is a lot of color. Rebbes, they wear their Tishbekesha. Their Tishbekesha is very colorful, right. Some of the Rebbes.
Okay.
He wore white. The Kohen Gadol wore white, and some say he really wasn't white. Chazal say that he it's linen, and they imported special linen from Egypt in the good days, and this linen was so fine, his garments were sheer. It wasn't really even white. It was sheer. Basically, you can see his erva. That's what it says. That the Kohen Gadol wore when he went Lefnai v'Lefnim was imported from Egypt, which was so fine that when they wove the garment, you can see, it was transparent. You can see right through the garment, you can see his flesh. when he went to the, so how could that be to go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim like he naked?
No one was looking.
So the answer is, no, he's not, because his body is covered by clothing, and you're saying exactly no one is watching, and this, you have to understand something. Let's go back, it's a very deep idea. That by creation, it says in Pasuk, Adam and Chava were Eirumim, naked, before the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there's no Chet. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is pristine. It's Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet. Everything there is L'mala Miderech HaTeva. The Aroin is Einem and Hamida. It's a little room, but in that room, the world has a different set of rules. In that room over there, it's Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChet. So technically, the Kohen Gadol can walk in there naked. There's no Yetzirah there. It's Adam Kodem HaChet, it's Eruvim. But yet, it says in the Parashas Tetzaveh, that clothing is not just to cover your nakedness. Purim is coming up. Purim is all about clothing. Is lechavoid ulesifaris. Garments have two elements. There's a levush. Why is it called a levush? Lo bosh. It covers your embarrassment. You wear garments to cover your embarrassment. But there's another element of clothing, and that's lechavoid ulesifaris. Lemai nafkamina. If you're wearing levush or you're wearing garments lechavoid ulesifares, if the garments are transparent, if they're sheer. So if you're wearing garments that are purely lechavoid ulesifares, it doesn't matter if you can see through them and you can see the naked body, because that element of not being able to see the body is an element of levush, loy boish. Every garment we wear today has two elements. We live with chet. Chet is so real, you can touch it. We unfortunately live in a world of chet. So therefore, we wear garments for two purposes. Loy boish, to cover our shame. And that means, according to Orthodox Jewish law, you know, that's why I go around with a tape measure in the streets. A tape measure. I have to make sure everything is below 2 inches below the knee. I carry with me in my pocket a tape measure just to make sure, you know. Haredi police. Loy boish. But there's also, it has to be beautiful. It has to be beautiful. L'chavoid ulesifares. But when you live in the world, the Gan Eden, and you want to have garments that are lechavoid ulesifares, but we don't need the element of loy boish, so then the clothing can be see-through. And that's what Chazal say, exactly what the Kohen Gadol did on Yom HaKippurim. When he went in lefnai v'lefnim, he wore clothing that was sheer. Linen, we think linen is white. Linen's only white when you live in a world of chet. When you live in a world of sin, you need to wear white linen to cover your nakedness. And other white's perfect, because white, what's white all about? Tahara. Purification is white. But when you live in a world where there's no chet, there's no need for the white. It can be sheer. So what color do the Kohen Gadol look? The color of his skin. Why is the color of the skin beige? Isn't that an interesting concept? The color, we're talking about color. The face turns red. Sometimes Chazal say your face can turn white. So what's going on? You turn white, or you turn, which one do you turn, red or white? It's really, so Rashi really says it's both. Rashi says first the person turns white, then he turns red. First the blood disappears in shock, turn white, and then the blood gushes back, then the person looks more red than he looked originally. So white and red go together. When you have white and red, what's the mix of white and red? Beige. I mean, the color of the skin. What's the color of the skin?
Flesh.
The color of flesh. The color of flesh, I mean, unless you're a cushy, then you have a different color.
The
skin color, why?
Because they use
it's racist. Racist. It's racism. Racist. Okay, so I don't know, but the truth is, I'm sure there are studies. Every culture, every has a different skin tone, a different natural skin color, every nationality, every. So what's the average? I mean, you ever see they you ever see? I'm sure you've all seen some point in time where they took an image of basically every an enormous number of images of people from all over the world, every nationality they can get their hands on, and they put it into a computer program, and the program measures the eyes, the cheeks, the structure of the whole face structure. Today it's probably very easy with facial recognition. It's very this software. They're investing hundreds of millions of dollars in facial recognition software, and they take samples of faces, millions and millions of faces. Say even your Google. You see what Google can do today without even telling you. They can show you all the faces, not real, and give you an average of humanity.
Awesome.
And they show you a picture of a person.
A blend.
A blend of a million people all over the world. So you would imagine this person must be the most handsome person you've ever seen, the most beautiful person. And you know what everyone says when they see this? It's so boring. It's so bland. You wouldn't give it a second look. Isn't that amazing? You take the whole humanity and you...
What color is it?
Whatever, like an average color. Obviously, you take the Cushing, you take people that are very light-colored skin, it comes out to an average. Go Google this online, and you see the result of the average blend of humanity. It is so boring. Like, you wouldn't want to marry that guy. If there was a girl, you wouldn't want to... He doesn't have any appeal. How could that be? How could that be? It really goes to show. It goes to show what makes man unique is what makes a person stand out is his uniqueness. Just being a generic summary, an average of humanity, doesn't mean anything. Okay, but also over here is very, very fast. Let's turn over this over. This is right. I'm going to have to stop. So, Kimishish Laboshes, Yisad and Ponavi, Kirubrok, Yotseitsu, Meroy, Behola, Yorutsu, Behochebos, Yer, Bikotse, Lakotse, Kiloye, Kiyedu, Malases. So according to the Radak, this is very, very fascinating. He learns the last part of the pasuk refers to the victims. The victims, they turn red in busha, and the victims are the ones that are like barak. The victims are like lightning. They're running back and forth. They have nowhere to go. They don't know what to do. They have no clue. They're clueless. What are we going to do now? The enemy has attacked. The enemy is taking over us. We have nowhere to live. We have nowhere to go. They're terrified. We come away to over here with these three mahalchim. We have over here Rashi, the Mesudos, and the Radak. Each one is presenting these two psukim very, very differently. Not just in who is the subject, but even in the translation of the words. The words, Haraldu, three perushim, Yishtak, Shekun, sound, weapons, banging your hips against one another. The idea of the Bechutzois, the battle will come to you. The Marein Kalapit is red. And Pelodois, what is Pelodois? Does Pelodois mean? Does Pelodois mean sparks, or we had Pelodois means a type of detergent that they would use to polish their chariots? Okay, we have to stop here. We'll see you tomorrow, Yitzhak Hashem. Take a short break, and we learn today the laws of Megillah, the reading of the Megillah, and then we'll talk about Chodesh Adar. How's your wife doing?
That reduces the amount of work I have to do.
His great grandfather.
He sent out about 70. He says, let me see how many people sent to me. Same. Who's giving this here? Who's giving
ticket? Leak.
Well, let me just tell you something.
He is like a, in a certain way.
Hello.
Brian, get that
stuff.
You know, of course. In a certain way, he is like a. It's a problem with it, that he likes doing things in a conservative way. But it's worse because, like, it seems like. I'm not sure. He was married. I'm not sure if he had a second wife. His second wife, she passed away. If his children were in this room right now, I would not say
that. They're wealthy.
We cannot.
Well, they built the Paris subway.
Right.
Paris metro is all around the country. They find it very
sick. I'm not happy about it.
Not.
Come with me or you go?
Yeah.
It's just a rough money. Yeah. So many of them are probably not.
Well, but is she divorced? Was she legally divorced?
The rule was the men had to marry Jewish women, but the women did not have to marry Jewish men.
She was married twice, divorced twice. I mean, you can assume that it was not luck. I go there one at a time.
I met him in Danbury.
Right, exactly.
My
grandfather on my father's side, I don't think they had found himself.
How are you feeling today?
Yeah.
It helps you?
It helps you? No, why did you feel away?
Does it help you?
I can't believe it. All right, sir. You might be going to a wedding together.
Really?
Okay. Let me point out something. Yes. Yes. You see, my grandfather, each wife. All right, I'll stay later on. It's almost very nice. Okay. There's a lot to talk about.
So go ahead. Yeah, but I can't run.
I'll say that. Check
the camera. Yeah.